Great. Beth and Jeff, thank you so much. Give them some more love. Sweet, very sweet. Before I introduce my good friend, Dr. Lloyd Tupper, I just want to tell you who else that's really important in this room, and that's Dr. J. Scott Neal, sitting behind Reverend Suzanne, and Reverend Marilyn Leo. Now, you might not know these people, but J. Scott has been, how long have you been a minister, dear one?
43 years.
43 years. And Dr. J is playing Ernest Holmes in the film today. Yes, so you might want to rub up against him at lunch. And the other one, Dr. Marilyn Leo, since she was a little girl, lived next to Ernest Holmes. And so she grew up with Ernest Holmes next door to her. Now, can you imagine? So you want to lean into her also. And she's also in charge of the archives. So everything about Ernest Holmes is being saved, being honored, being respected by Dr. Marilyn. And they will be available at the end of the movie to share some of their wisdom with you or any questions. But kind of lean into them, okay? Because just by being in their presence, you get it. Okay. Just a second. I lean into you every opportunity that I get. Now, yeah, our star of the show. You are the star. You are the brilliant light of God that shines so bright that you don't even have to lean in you, because just by being this close to you, it just washes all over me. Yeah. It's awesome. And that is my dear friend, Reverend Dr. Lloyd Tupper. Now, let me tell you about him. He is so funny, and he is so fun. And I don't remember who I was at the time, but I wasn't who I am today when I first met Dr. Lloyd. Because he gave me permission to do the work. And he said, don't you worry. He said, I'll do the prayer for you. I'll hold the truth for you. You just go out and do the work. That has stayed with me forever. And I'm still doing it. Dr. Lloyd became a religious scientist in 1967 and a minister in 1974. He's created four churches. He was the president of the Holmes Institute and was instrumental in creating that ministerial school in a greater way. I could go on about him, except that, you know, all his accolades, all his awards. He's down there telling me to go on. And he's cute as a button. And every time he would come to Santa Rosa, and I was in a breakfast club with him, and it was just delightful to go have breakfast with him. I think it was once a week. Made a difference in my life and many other people's lives. If you want to know anything about science of mind and how to work it, this man's going to tell you today. It's all about the law. It's all about being open, all about being receptive to that truth, to that light. And all you have to do is look at him, and he exudes truth and light. Please give a warm welcome to my beloved friend, Reverend Dr. Lloyd Tupper.
Thank you. Just let me pull my pants up a bit. I've been vacationing up at North Tahoe City at a beautiful estate on the lake, and I forgot how to tie my tie. I forgot my jacket in the closet where I stayed the first night I was here, down in the flatlands, I call them now, down in San Anselmo. And I've been telling Francine, my my dear friend, and who helped me so much yesterday with everybody that was with us yesterday. It was just a really profound experience for me, and I thank you all for being there and teaching me. And I learned a great deal from you, and prayfully I gave you something in return. Ease of grace, how's that? We had a wonderful time. Anyhow, my name is Lloyd Tupper, and I'm a practicing religious scientist. I know that we have a new name for our wonderful church organization, Centers of Spiritual Living, but I remind myself every day that I'm a religious scientist. And I do it purposely because I can usually remember from one day to the next, but I, as I said about Francine, she'll remind me when I'm in the wrong day. And so I do remember one day from the next, but I also turned to Ernest Holmes, and I need a hit from him every day. I go to the well, and Ernest is there like Rumi, you know. There's a place out there, Rumi said, beyond right and wrong, I'll meet you there. And I meet Ernest at the well, because every day I want to drink the waters of the high excelsior and wash myself clean inside and out, and then I want to start, or what I call prime the pump, the cosmic pump. And that's our subconscious. I want to engage it. Oh, I'm ready to go. I can feel it coming on me, Jay. I can feel it coming on me. Jay, you look so darn young, I hate you. Jay and I used to be on the air in San Francisco, and I had a program called Creative Thought for the Day, which I took from Creative Thought magazine, and I don't remember what your show was. Your Power for Good. Okay. And we used to back each other. I don't know who was in the back and who was in the front, nor who do I know one, but we were quite a team. We gave it to them, didn't we? We did. Anyhow, I know there are many ministers in the audience today. I welcome you. I acknowledge you for the work you're doing, for the work you have been doing, and for your dedication, because the ministry is not easy. Everybody has some comment about how you could do it differently, how you could do it better, and how you could do it somewhere else. Except here. I know they don't say that to you because I know I'm going to protect you. Plus that muscle man you got next to you. You did good, girl. You did good. Do you mind if I tell them how you served me pie?
Please do.
Reverend Maggie was telling you in the opening of my introduction that I knew her at the breakfast club we had, Breakfast of Champions, that I organized in the city, and then I did it up in Santa Rosa for Mary Shelton, Reverend Mary, who at this very time is being, I pray, elected our new minister at Corte Madera, the Golden Gate Center of Spiritual Living. And that's a church I started in 1983 with Daniel Spangler. There he is over there. Did I say it right? Okay. He's made flowers for me for every church I've gone to. And these zinniers, did you arrange those? Well, whoever did those zinniers, they are exquisite. Exquisite. I love those flowers. When I started the church back in 1983, which is the new church, brother, that is getting a new minister today, prayfully, we've all prayed on it, and we think everything is lined up. We have brought in the big guns, and it looks like we're going to have a new minister. But I do want to acknowledge the ministers, as I said, and I want to acknowledge you, Reverend Maggie, for not only serving the best pie in all Sonoma County, but she was a waitress when I met her, when I first met her. And I knew at the way she ran behind that counter and she served up that pie, I thought, this is a minister in the making. I can tell you, she can just, I have to be careful how I say this because my pants are loose today, but she can just, well, you get the gist of it, I won't tell you. Okay, anyhow, what I want to share with you today is so much that I'll never get it in the brief moments that I have. That's the challenge of every minister in this movement. When you're working with the thoughts of Ernest Holmes and the collection of all the great minds that have come down through the annals of all humankind from every religion, from every philosophy, it's all in here. And I had a former spiritual practice in Catholicism. And I had been looking since I think I was in the first grade, and I was in my catechism class with nuns. Well, we won't go into that. Anyhow, my mother informed me at my ordination as a religious science minister that the nuns developed my character, and I should never forget that. So I won't forget it. I acknowledge Sister Bonaventure this morning. But anyhow, when I got through with parochial school and I went to some other schools that were not parochial and I lived again, I was in search of something beyond the strict principles of Catholicism. Now, I have to say the Catholic Church has changed a great deal since I was a practicing Catholic, and I'm not saying bad things about Catholicism. I'm just saying that I attracted the most difficult nuns in the movement. It's the law of attraction without knowing I was practicing it. And you will notice that I'm careful with my knuckles and my, this right ear is a little lower than this ear. That's why I told the sound person to put it on this ear. Anyhow, when I first was introduced to Science of Mind in 1967 by Dr. Barclay Johnson, who was giving a special talk like I am with you today in, of all places, Las Vegas, Nevada, and this friend of mine who had been reading Creative Thought magazine said, I really think you would like what they teach and what they speak. And I said, well, I can't go. You know, I'm a practicing Catholic. In fact, I go to St. Jude's Church. That's the saint of the impossible. And I go there regularly, and I can't go to a Protestant church. And he said to me, well, judge, because I'll go straight to hell. That's the thing that we used to be told. Can't go through the doors of a Protestant church. So when I got to go to this church, I had a lot of trepidation, and I said, well, I got to go to an early mass because the system of Catholicism is that if I go to a Protestant church, I'm going directly to hell. Whereas, my friend Jerry Shepherd said to me, well, judging from where I see you living, you won't have far to go. Now, doesn't that sound like a religious scientist? Turn something into a bouquet of zinnias. All right, so I went to church. I was very, very skittish. I sat right up in the front row where Reverend Susan and Maggie, Reverend Maggie, I'm sorry. I call you all sorts of names behind your back, too, you know. Yeah. And I sat down, and I noticed on the side of the congregation hall, there were two glass lights with a name on them. And when the light flashed, it said, be quiet. Be quiet. Be quiet. And I thought, my God, what kind of a church is this? They have to tell people to be quiet. That was my first judgment. Judgment. And then the next thing was, it was Easter Sunday, April of 1967. I'd just gone through you know, what is it, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and here it was, the resurrection of Jesus the Christ. On Sunday, they didn't call him Jesus the Christ back then. That's what I call him now. And Barclay Johnson leaned over the podium like I'm trying to do, and he said, "There is no death in God." And I thought, oh, God, I knew it was going to happen. This is the announcement for my descent into the fires of hell. And 1 hour and about 10 minutes later, after, oh, so much commotion, I can't even remember. It was like singing and hugging and turning and jumping up and raising up the Christ. You know, we had to bring him up. And I walked out of the doors of that church, and I said to my friend, "I am going to become a minister in this faith. I've searched for it all my life because it showed me a different way." This quote that was up here, that is still up there, is a quote from Gandhi. Do you, any of you see the picture Gandhi? Well, in the picture of Gandhi at the end, when he's lying down on a mat, a young Muslim boy was talking about wanting to kill Hindus. And Gandhi's famous quote was, "Let me show you a different way." And of course, not that long after, a Muslim did in fact shoot Gandhi. Don't get any ideas. So I felt that when I thought of Ernest Holmes, and prayfully, when you think of Ernest Holmes and Religious Science and your wonderful church and your wonderful ministry here and all your practitioners, you have found a different way to live your life. Now, the one thing that I think is not stressed enough, but then I feel that I'm a slow learner, so I have to stress it enough for me. And that is, daily, I read something from the Science of Mind textbook. Now we have this wonderful new study that Edward out of Santa Rosa did, Edward Vionne, is that how you pronounce it? All right, Dr. Edward, Eddie to me. He has gone through this entire textbook and prescribed a daily reading by page and paragraph, and it jumps all over so that in 1 year you've read the entire textbook. Now, why do I need this? Now, Francine, I said that word. You told me not to use need. Why do I require this? See, I'm always teachable. The reason I require it is because I begin every day anew. And I really try to forget what went on yesterday. Not that I'm going to forget everybody and everything, but given my propensity and my early conditioning as a child, I am greatly affected by what we call, or Carl Jung called, the collective unconscious, or in our jargon, race consciousness. And I'm aware, anybody could be aware this week or last week about the news and all the despairing things that have been going on and are going on and were going on and presumably might continue to go on. And guess what? I do not want to wake up to those thoughts. And I do have a tendency in that brief moments of waking up to think about things that are not established for my greater good. And I've had to say to myself, Lloyd, you need to create a better way. And you cannot allow yourself to rise up, as Thoreau says, in the new dawn, to reawaken into the new dawn, and to be reborn daily, if you do not prime the pump, the cosmic pump. Now, what's the cosmic pump to us religious scientists? our individual use of universal mind, which we call our subjective mind. We individualize the universal mind, which is God. It infiltrates us, it's always with us, it goes before us, it's above us, below us, beside us, around us, within us, and it's always there. But guess what? It waits on us. Because we are, whether you like it or not, the individualization of that one life that is God. Now, I don't go around telling people I am God. By my actions, they will know. God help them. But I don't go around saying I'm God, but I do know it. I know it. Jesus told me, all the great saints have told me, Paul writes about it, Christ in you, Lloyd, is our hope and glory. But guess what? He's written it to you, all of you. And now as a religious science, I take that literally, that the Christ spirit in me, as it is in you, is our hope as a population, as a species, as part of the world order, to consider that to be the opportunity to bring hope and glory to all humankind, to our planet, to our neighbors, to our workplace, to everything we do, everything we do. And so everything filters through that for me. And I was saying to Francine on the way down, I said something, I don't know what it was, but I said, I want to retract that, and I want to say something different about that. So what's happening, I believe, is that I'm priming that pump by reading this book every day, and today it was just one page and one paragraph. It began on 282, paragraph 2, and it went to 283 to the end of paragraph 1 right at the top. It took me all of 30 seconds. Now, I visualize this. When I was a kid, I was born outside of Boston in a small burg, but we used to go up to New Hampshire in the summer where we had what was called a camp. You see, the Castro in San Francisco didn't invent that name. It was a camp. And we used to have to go out to the well house, and after the winter, we'd have to prime the pump. And that was my chore. It was very important. And I would go out there because my dad told me I had to take a glass of water out of the thermos that we brought up, and I would have to start going like this on the pump and putting a little bit of water down there and a little bit of water until the pump handle took over, because we were on the top of an artesian type well and the water starts coming up and you have to let go of that handle quickly. Now, I've kind of used that system for myself because I feel that when I read something, and I'm going to read you just a little bit, I won't get too heady on you, but I'll read you something out of here. When I do that, and I do it, I said this yesterday, and it's true, I do not get out of bed before I do it. Because I know my mind, or let me put it this way, I know the use of my mind, that I have made my personal share. And I know that my mind will come up with every little thing that I don't like. I don't think they should have done that. I don't think that Trump should have done that. I don't think the Democrats should have done that. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm an oddball. You know, maybe I'm just getting voices in the night and I need to be locked up. But if I stay in my bed and close the door, and I get up in the morning and pack the pillows behind me, and I open my textbook, I'm home. And I am totally willing to give all the credit to Ernest Holmes and all the great minds and spirit that went into putting this book together for me. It's not for you. Your book is for you. But my book is for me. This is my buddy. And it talks to me. And before I can start thinking too much, I'm looking for my glasses. I read all of like a minute. And so today's lesson is on mental equivalence. And Ernest says on paragraph 2 of page 282, which is the assignment, and I'll tell you how to get it, the way to proceed is to begin right where you are. Yesterday no longer exists. Now, all the people that say, oh God, if you knew what I've gone through, or the life I've had, or that last husband, and oh God, that woman I lived with, she was terrible. Now we got kids, and I've got alimony, and I'm confused about my sexual orientation, but that's what ministers deal with, so I won't get into that. Okay, so here it is. The way to proceed is to begin right where we are. It is not scientific to attempt to begin somewhere else. This is earnest. One who understands the systematic use of the law, meaning the law of mind, will understand that he or she is where he or she is because of what he or she, because of what he is or she is, but he will not stay, he will not say, I must remain where I am because of what I am. Instead, he or she will say, will begin to disclaim what appears to be. As he or she makes these statements and releases wrong subjective tendencies, providing in their place a correct concept of life and reality, they will automatically be lifted out of this condition, impelling forces sweeping everything before them. Cecil B. DeMille now is in this now, will set him free or her free, and their trust in spirit and the working of the law will exalt them into a new experience of immortal life. Now, I added that last part, but I thought it should be there. Now, that's all I'm going to quote, so you can relax now. I can put this big book down. Got to tell you a funny story. Francine and I were parking the car in the lot back here, and we noticed a gentleman that seemed to be heading for us, and I noticed he had just taken a swig out of a brown bottle. So he was feeling the spirit. And he came up to the car, on the door I was opening, and he said, is that place a Bible church? Oh, and I was very quick. I said, I have no idea. I have no idea, because I've learned. You just don't do that in parking lots, you know. You don't do that. Anyhow, then he went on to tell me about the tree that was growing in the story of the Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden in the beginning of time in Genesis, that a leaf from that tree was 7 miles long. A leaf. And they had found that leaf 28 miles from where the tree of knowledge was planted. And you know what he said? You can play a football game on that leaf. I knew I'd met my match. I thought, I don't have time to embellish this, but I'm going to call Tom Brady, that's a Patriot, I'm a Patriot fan, and say, how do we do that on a leaf? But anyhow, aside from that, I'm not going to quote any more from Ernest, but I am going to tell you, there's a way to get the lesson so that you can do something like I am prescribing for you. Now, I want you to get in mind, don't trust what you put into subconscious mind to be your witness. Because everything that we put into subconscious mind is either stored or let go, if we let it. And I deliberately let it. Because I want to live in the moment, and I want to get the good word, the good start, the good primer, like in the well. I want to prime my subconscious mind, and I want to do it in a different way, to quote Gandhi. And I am doing it, and I have been doing it for now 51 years. And it never bores you. It never gets, because guess what? We change. Even though it doesn't look outwardly we're changing, we are changing. And when you experiment with the truth, as Ernest is saying, not by reading a whole chapter, not by taking another class, not that I'm against classes, because I think they're wonderful, they build a foundation, but experiment with yourself. When you get up in the morning, you don't put your feet on the ground, you lean over, you take your textbook, because you've set it at the reading for the next day when you go to sleep, and you just spend a minute, 30 seconds in a minute, and prime your pump before you get into that day. And listen to pure, unadulterated truth. Now, I didn't know. It took me years to figure this out, by the way. It took me years. Everything I had learned wasn't all bad, but it wasn't making me feel like Thoreau, that this is the new dawn, reawaken spiritual artisan called Lloyd Tupper. I didn't know when I went to the canvas of life that day to paint that I wouldn't have to paint by numbers, but I would paint by mystical inspiration. I didn't know at the time of how to prove that God exists, because unlike Moses, I never had a burning bush experience. But what I did have, and what I continue to have, is I come unto the self that is the greater self, and yes, the self that is Lloyd Tupper, who I know is a loving, caring, beautiful, wonderful spiritual being, temporarily in this human experience, in the unfoldment of spirit for its glory, and this ain't it. This is not it. Jesus said, no man can take my body from me. I put it down and pick it up at will. Now, he had something to prove in the resurrection, and that has served a lot of us well. But another thing I'm going to leave you with, because I don't want to tire you out with chores to do, is I want you all, before you get your book, and you're lying there thinking, oh, that Lloyd Tupper, what a pain in the neck he was to tell me I've got to read this book, I've got to prime the pump. I want you to lie there and, like Yogananda taught, put your arms across your chest like this and say, wonderful, wonderful, and I added the word immortal me. I was never born. I will never die. Then when you set that in, then you open your book, you prime the pump, and you go out and conquer the world. You can do it. I want to say to you, it doesn't matter how old you are, how inexperienced you are, how doubtful you are, how unwilling you are, how intelligent, what is it, you're part of the intelligentsia. You talk and write in erudite terms that nobody can understand, which is wonderful for all the people that don't want to hear what you have to say. But if you will do these few things, you will have discovered a course of miracles. Not the formal course of miracles, which I bless. They've done great things. But we live in, Thomas Troward, my mentor, so to speak, always said, there are no miracles, there are phenomena that can be explained. A miracle is something that most people think cannot be explained. But today, with the new physics, we can explain a phenomena or something out of the ordinary right to the T. If you want to know how Jesus healed people instantaneously, first, get his Christ consciousness level. That might take you 18 years of traveling around all the great centers of the Eastern world and learning. Then be reborn again and have from the very moments of first self-consciousness everybody telling you you're the Son of God. This, you are the Messiah, you are the promised one. That's up to 12. Then you take another 18 years and you tour all the great avatars and seers and sages and whatever, and you sit with them, you sleep in their home, you eat their food, you do whatever that is socially acceptable, and then you come back and you have 3 years, and you are now self-realized, like a great guru of sorts. I still believe that Jesus Christ was the greatest teacher that humankind ever got, because I'm a Westerner. I was raised in the New Testament, and I know the Old Testament, and I quote it when it serves me. You heard that, didn't you? And I adore and love Ernest Holmes. Now that's what I found, and I'm now in my 80th year. I know you don't like me to say that, but my birthday was June 8th, and I achieved 79. And am I not in my 80th year? Okay, so they agree with me now. So it's working for me, and as I stand before you today, I am full of enthusiasm. My body hasn't caught up with my enthusiasm yet, but I'm working on it. I'm doing yoga now, and that's something you do not want to see me do. But I'm doing it because I realize that my physical body cannot keep up with the spiritual body inside, which of course we have, that's perfect. That's how we heal. We go back to the causative action to remove the block that's producing the effect. And I am just having a renaissance of this book. And what I'm saying is, don't wait 50 years. Don't wait 50 years. Listen to Reverend Maggie. Listen to, oh God, that's the last thing I have to tell you. I got one more thing. Do you have a practitioner? If you don't have a practitioner, you're in doo-doo. Because a practitioner will keep you on course. Now, I talked to practitioners yesterday, so it's obvious I support them. But I have a practitioner. I had a practitioner up till a month ago. I'm in between. I'm catching my breath now. I'm about to sign up with another one. God help me. Because when they tell me all the things that I'm capable of doing, and I take it in hook, line, and sinker, there's no stopping me. Now, my sister informed me recently, you know, I know your faith is that you will live forever, that you're an immortal being. But what if that isn't true? She's still a practicing Catholic. She said, I'm going to have to deal with it when we have your funeral. And I'm going to tell people, you know, my brother, he believed he was immortal. He was happy all the days of his life when he found religious science. And he got right up to that point where he died. And he was so happy, he didn't know that there was no immortal life. So which path would you take? I'm not worried about the future when I go over. I know there's work for me to do. I know there's a lot for me to learn. And my accumulated consciousness, which is that little white ball that they show when a person dies, you know, they show the spirit, and then they show this little, which they call a soul, with two little white wings going like this, and the soul and the spirit is going. I have defined that little white ball with wings. It is your accumulated consciousness. It's what you're aware of, what you've become aware of, what you've subjectified, what you've gotten rid of. Oh, think of that. And then you become what's called enlightened, and you soar. You soar, like Isaiah says, with the giant eagles. What a wonderful thought that is. So, my dear friends, thank you for allowing me to be with you today. I have tons more to tell you, but I am aware that I've already overgone my time limit. Maggie's starting to move around in her chair. And I know that you will take my thing. And you said that everyone in this church has 365?
Every new member gets
365. Every new member gets 365? Okay.
We have some in the bookstore.
You do?
We have some textbooks in the bookstore.
Okay. So I advise you to get a textbook, and if it does not have, for any reason, which the new ones do,
we've made copies on the side.
They're on the side. Your listing for your daily reading is in there. You'll have read the textbook in 1 year, no matter how many times you've read it. Try this. Read 365 every day. Get your spiritual goose and take off for the heavens. And as Rumi said, I'll meet you there. Okay, good morning. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.